Well, good evening. Hey, a couple of things. I announced it Sunday. There would be no men's Bible study this week, either Tuesday or Thursday, since tomorrow's Thursday. I want to remind you guys. And those of you guys that know any of the men that perhaps aren't here that come to that men's study, if you know that they don't know that we're not having that, maybe you could give them a call. Spread the word. But we'll resume next week. Exodus chapter 30 tonight. That was kind of interesting. Gal came up to me before service and gave me this little thing of mints. What? Everybody's laughing like, yeah. It's not that bad, my breath. Anyway, but these are special mints because it says on them, atone mints. And it says underneath that, for each of your sins. And look how little it is. I thought it was pretty special, you know. I mean, look, it's just a little teeny thing. Little does she know. Well, let's get into the word, Exodus chapter 30. Now, we've been studying the tabernacle and the priest's garments and all the furniture that's been in the tabernacle. It's been a great study. And Sunday we talked about the laver, that bowl of water, and we talked about that kind of in depth on Sunday. And this is a great chapter, chapter 30. It really speaks of some powerful truths, but sometimes the things we do in our Christianity, the things we do as Christians, the services we attend, like this one and on Sunday, the songs we sing, you know, the prayers perhaps that are offered up, they can seem religious to people. They can seem like religious ceremony to people. Unbelievers especially will look at us and they might think that we're a bit strange. And they might be right. We are a bit strange in this area. And we know that people will look at us and say, man, you guys are strange. Or perhaps you're even fanatical to some people that you know. Because you will come to church, you know, in the middle of the week. And then on Sundays too, and sometimes on Sunday nights. You know, what's wrong with you people? The world looks at us and says, what's the deal with you guys? You guys go to church all the time and you're involved with all these things. What's wrong with you? And we know, of course, that the things that we do, these things that might seem ceremonial to others, prayer and studying the word and worship, we understand that they're simply ways that we express to and relate to our God. We know that we hear from Him in the Word. We know that worship is a way in which we can express our hearts to the Lord. So we understand that, but many people don't. And many Christians, really, guys, don't understand this. They don't know. Oftentimes, why we do what we do. And many of them don't do those things. And to many, they are nothing more than ceremony. It's religion to them. It's a thing that they do. And many times, people will read these Old Testament scriptures like we've been going through, Genesis and Exodus and Leviticus and Deuteronomy, especially these first five books, and they'll think, man, this is strange stuff. Foreign. It doesn't make any sense. It's not practical for me, these ordinances and rituals and all that. It just doesn't seem to fit my life at all. But it's what they mean, isn't it, that are important. It's not the ordinances or the regulations themselves. It's the lessons they teach us that are important. And we know that. But many don't. And we come to this 30th chapter of Exodus. And it's a great, great text because it concerns our relationship to the Lord in several ways, but primarily and mainly you can sum up this whole chapter in one word, and that is worship. This is a chapter of worship. It tells us how, who, and what it takes to be a worshiper of God. And it's an important, important study because, guys, that's what we were created to do. We were created to be worshipers of God. We weren't created to just get through this life as best we can. We weren't created to find as much pleasure in this life as we can. And so many people miss the mark because that's exactly what they do with their days on this earth, is they seek to fulfill everything that they think that they want. And then they find themselves, of course, empty and dry. And they've wasted all the years of their life. So I want to get right into this. We're not going to finish it. I can just tell you right now. I thought, as I started studying earlier today, I thought, okay, you know, we already covered the laver on Sunday. I mean, that's a nice little chunk of the chapter. And then I started studying and I thought, man, there's no way in the world. So I'm telling you, there's no way in the world. But let's get started. We'll get as far as we can. Verse 1, "And thou shalt make an altar to burn incense upon. Of shittim wood shalt thou make it. A cubit shall be the length thereof, and a cubit the breadth thereof. Four square shall it be, and two cubits shall be the height thereof. The horns thereof shall be of the same, and thou shalt overlay it with pure gold, the top thereof and the sides thereof round about, and the horns thereof, and thou shalt make unto it a crown of gold round about. And the two golden rings shalt thou make to it under the crown of it by the two corners thereof, upon the two sides of it thou shalt make it. And they shall be for places for the staves to bear it withal. And thou shalt make the staves of shittim wood and overlay them with gold. And thou shalt put it before the veil, that is, by the ark of the testimony, before the mercy seat, that is, over the testimony where I will meet with thee. And Aaron shall burn thereon sweet incense every morning. When he dresseth the lamps, he shall burn incense upon it. And when Aaron lighteth the lamps at evening, he shall burn incense upon it, a perpetual incense before the Lord throughout your generations. You shall offer no strange incense thereon, nor burnt sacrifice, nor meat offering, neither shall you pour drink offering thereon. And Aaron shall make an atonement upon the horns of it once in a year with the blood of the sin offering of atonements. Once in the year shall he make atonement upon it throughout your generations. It is most holy unto the Lord." Now, there was to be an altar made, and this altar was to burn incense on. Now, incense, as you may already know, is that substance that when you burn it, when you light it with fire, it lets out this really wonderful fragrance. Sometimes. Depends on the incense. I've smelled some really sweet incense. And then I've smelled some incense that was like, wow. But it's supposed to be sweet and fragrant. And it's this substance that they would mash down, these fragrances that they would mash down into a powder, you know, and then they would light it. And as it lit and burnt and turned into a kind of a little coal of its own, then it would just smolder. And the smoke that would rise up would smell very wonderful and fill any area that was lit with that fragrance. And so this altar in the tabernacle, in the holy place, it was for burning incense. And of course, all things in the tabernacle, folks, picture for us Jesus Christ. And so we know that this golden altar, which was wooden underneath and then overlaid with gold, is much like some of the other pieces of furniture, and that is picturing Jesus in his earthiness and as his golden deity would describe him. So it's Jesus, it's the man, and it's God, it's him both described here. But here's the thing, this golden altar, one purpose it had, one purpose only, and that was to burn incense. That's all it was for, and cause there to be a sweet smell all around the tabernacle. That was the purpose of this altar. It's a great illustration of what happened when Jesus, our Lord, was tried by fire. And what came from him when he was tried by fire, of course, was this wonderful fragrance, this sweet smell that was a sweet savor, we're told, unto the Lord. The sacrifice Jesus made on the cross, we're told in the scriptures, sent up a sweet smell to the Father. He was pleased with it. In other words, it was satisfying his wrath towards our sin. So we understand that that's the picture here, and we see that that's what happened with Jesus Christ. He was tested with fire, and smoke came up that was sweet from his life that was basically offered there on the altar. Remember, he is the burnt offering. And here again, we see that the illustration is of him being a sweet savor to the Lord. But it also pictures, you see, Jesus Christ, our high priest, who ever lives to make intercession for us. In other words, we know, and we'll see here in a minute, we know that the incense burning on this altar, the smoke that came off that incense, we know that that represents something else as well, and that is the prayers of the saints. We know that incense burning represents that. Prayer of yours, the prayer of mine, the prayer of saints from all ages that have ascended into heaven. But here's the thing. Jesus, our great high priest, in Hebrews chapter 7, you can jot it down if you want, or I'll just read it to you. In chapter 7 of Hebrews, verse 25, it says this, speaking of Jesus, our great high priest, he says, "Wherefore, he is able also to save them to the uttermost that come unto God by him, seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for them." Our great high priest, Jesus Christ, he ever lives to make intercession, prayers for us. Now, that's a comforting thought for many, isn't it? Maybe for you, but I wonder why it's a comfort to you. Because for many people, it's a comfort for them to know Jesus is praying for them because they think that he's praying for them so they'll make it through this life. That, oh, he's praying for me, you know, that I'll make it. He's hoping that I'll make it, so he's praying. No. No, he's not. What, he's not hoping I'll make it? No, he's not hoping you'll make it. He knows you're going to make it. Well, why is he praying then? Why is he making intercession? His prayers, guys, are not hopeful prayers. They are prayers of assurance. This is why he can save you, as the writer of Hebrews says, to the uttermost, which means beyond your grasp, beyond anyone's grasp. The uttermost is so far out there that nobody can reach it. He can save you to the uttermost because, you see, he's not praying that you'll make it to heaven. He's praying in this way that causes you and me to be making it. In other words, we are kept, as Peter says, by the power of God. We're not kept by our own power. In other words, we're not saying, oh, Lord, I'm glad you're praying for me, because if you weren't praying for me, you know, I might not be able to make it through this. No, he's praying because he knows you're going to make it. You're going to be there. It's an assurance prayer, not a hopeful prayer. He's not just hopeful. And this is a, you might say, well, you're splitting hairs. But this is a huge issue. They're not prayers of hope. that you'll complete your salvation. But prayers that maintain your salvation for you. He keeps you saved. Aren't you glad? What if you had to keep yourself saved? Well, then you wouldn't enjoy your salvation very much because you would be worried constantly, wouldn't you? How many times, Lord, can I come back to you? How many times can I come knocking on your door asking for forgiveness? Is this the last time? Or is this the last time? I mean, every time we would mess up, every time we'd sin, we'd come back with that same heart, wouldn't we? I guess I've got maybe one more shot at this. And then, of course, the next day or the next minute, you'd blow it again and you'd think again, wouldn't you? That I think I'm wearing him out. I'm wearing the Lord out. But this is the beauty of it. You can't. You can't wear him out. He's inexhaustible in grace and mercy. You know, I pondered this at one point, and I asked the Lord, Lord, how many times can I come back? As many times as you come. You can come as many times as you'll come. You mean I can just come back again? Yeah. It's called grace. It's called mercy. If it wasn't that way, then it wouldn't be called grace and mercy. It would be called works. It would be called self-justification. It'd be called self-sanctification. You can do it. You can do enough to make yourself good enough for me, God would have to say. But you can't. And he prays for you and me in this way that he knows, you see, that his pleas are not pleas to the Father saying, oh, Lord, please forgive these guys. Because, man, they've blown it again. He knows that his blood's covered you. Oh, he's praying for you, but he knows you're going to make it. And I'm so glad. Now, also, we know that the incense represents, again, not just Jesus' prayers for us as our great high priest, but also the prayers of the saints. In Psalm 141, verse 2, the psalmist says, let my prayer be set forth before thee as incense, and the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. So, the prayers of the saints. The psalmist says, let my prayers, like incense, be lifted up to you. And also, in Revelation chapter 8, and of course, I just have to establish this so you know that the incense represents the prayers of the saints. In Revelation 8, verse 3, another angel came and stood at the altar. Again, this is the altar having a golden censer, incense. And there was given unto him much incense that went in the censer, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which is before the throne. There's a golden altar in heaven. Just like the one described here in the tabernacle. And the same thing happens there. The prayers of the saints are offered up. They're there in God's presence. These prayers of yours and mine, you see. So the incense offered up by the priests here in the tabernacle speaks of prayer. I think we've established that. But note something here. So if this is the case, this is true. Here's the incense at this golden altar. And when it's lit, it represents the prayers of the saints. But note this, it has to be lit. Prayer, guys, being represented here as the incense, had to be lit. Do you know what it would do if you didn't light it? Do you know what you'd do with incense if it's not lit? Nothing. It doesn't do anything if it's not lit. You knew that, didn't you? It doesn't do it. It just sits there. It's just a bunch of stuff that's crushed together, and it just sits. If it's not lit, it doesn't smoke. And if it doesn't smoke, then that smoke doesn't rise. And that's exactly what it's intended to do, you see. The smoke wouldn't ascend. The fragrance wouldn't fill the air if the incense wasn't lit. And this is the case with me and you in our prayers. You understand this? Our prayers, you see, need to be lit. Is my prayer fired up? Is it ignited? Do I pray passionately, or do I just kind of throw a few up? Not throw up, but throw a few up. You know, do I just throw a couple of them up in the air as I'm just kind of cruising through life? Or do I really, truly understand that prayer is important? And do I understand that this is actually my means, you see, of offering my heart to God and receiving back from him that which he wants me to know and to do? Well, what are you saying? Am I supposed to work for passion in prayer if I lack it? No, you're not supposed to work it up. Well, what are you saying? We understand that the lighting of this incense was to be done a specific way. In Leviticus chapter 16, I'll read it to you if you want. You can turn there if you want to, but jot it down nonetheless. In Leviticus chapter 16, verse 12, it says, he shall take a censer, the one who's lighting the incense, of burning coals off the fire of the altar before the Lord, and his hands full of sweet incense, beaten small, and bring it within the veil. He shall put the incense upon the fire before the Lord, that the cloud of the incense may cover the mercy seat that is upon the testimony, that he die not. So lighting this incense, the prescription to light it, the way to light it, the only way to light the incense on this altar of incense was to go grab hot coal, hot fire, from off the altar of sacrifice. Not this one, the brazen altar at the entrance of the tabernacle, remember? The brazen altar, the brass altar where the burnt offering was given up, where Jesus, you see, is represented as being our sacrifice. So here's what has to happen. You're not supposed to work up passion when you pray, but here's what's supposed to happen. The fire to light the incense, the fire to light the prayer, is to come off the altar of sacrifice. What is it that's going to fire up my prayers? What is it's going to light up my prayers that makes me passionate about prayer? Only one thing, and that is Jesus Christ and his sacrifice for me, the brazen altar. It's when I remember that Jesus died for me and died for others that I become fired up in my prayer life, that I begin to get passionate about prayer for you, for my family, for me personally. That's when I get fired up. If I don't remember Jesus Christ, I will not be fired up and passionate in prayer. I won't. Oh, I might be scared. I might be upset in prayer. I might be anxious in prayer. I might even cry and weep tears over the prayers that I'm offering up to the Lord. But listen, that does not mean you're passionate and fired up in your prayer life. This is a mistake that's commonly made. Oh, I cried when I prayed. That prayer really took. You know, I got before the Lord and man, I started crying and everything. That was a good one. I'm sure he's going to deal with that now because I cried and I was emotional and I was really worked up. Worked up doesn't mean fired up. It just doesn't. And there's a difference here that you need to understand. You see, Paul said, it's the love of Christ that constrains me. It's his love for me that pushes me, that drives me, that causes me to be passionate and pray for people and myself and everybody I know. That's what causes me to be excited and ready to pray, to say, okay, I'm going to pray now. I'm going to pray because the car broke. Well, that's okay to pray over the car. But listen, I find it difficult sometimes to pray passionately over my car I might pray with anxiety over my car or over the bills. I pray with many mixed emotions when I pray, but not necessarily passionately and fired up like the prescription given here to light this incense of prayer. And there's a difference, folks, and you need to understand it. When I realize again how much Jesus Christ has done for me, how much he loves me, that ignites me. It lights me up. And I pray with passion. But notice here in verse 9, there was to be no strange incense or burnt sacrifice or meat offering or drink offering. There was to be no offerings here. Not on this altar. Now, why is the Lord here making this so specific? Why no offerings at this altar where the incense was burnt? Because those issues, those things, you see, picture what happens when we're saved, when we're justified. The burnt offering, remember? The drink offerings, the meat offerings, they were all offerings atoning for, covering up our sin. That was what was pictured at the brazen altar. So in other words, all those issues were dealt with at the brazen altar. So none of those offerings are done here at this altar of incense, this golden altar. None of them. We're not to bring those things to this altar. What do you mean? I mean exactly what we just talked about a minute ago. Jesus Christ making prayers for us constantly is not praying that you're going to make it. He knows that, and you're not to bring that prayer to his altar of incense. What? What do you mean? I mean, you need to understand where that was dealt with before you come to the altar of incense. Before prayer is offered up, you need to deal with this first. And guys, if you're going to this altar of incense, bringing burnt offerings, bringing offerings of your own, which is described here as strange incense. If you bring strange incense, in other words, it's not his. You brought it. You're offering it. If you bring these things, what you're basically doing is insulting what Jesus Christ did at the brazen altar. I'm bringing this, Lord, because, you know, if I bring this, if I offer you that, if I come with this other thing, then you're going to answer this prayer, aren't you? Because you're going to see how really, truly a deep Christian I am. And how serious I am about this. And how I'm really, really, Lord, I'm really committed in this area. And aren't you impressed, Lord? Because look. Look at what I'm offering. You don't have to do that. Why? It's strange incense. In other words, guys, we don't bring anything of our own to this altar. We don't keep ourselves saved by praying. That's strange incense. To say, Lord, you know, I know that if I come and pray more often, then that really will assure me that I'm getting to heaven, that I'm saved still. No, it does not. If you can't accept the fact, you see, that you were saved based on what took place at the brazen altar, then that's strange incense to bring to prayer. What do I do then? What if I'm concerned that I'm not saved? Go back. You can't come to this altar, this golden altar of prayer, until you've been to the first altar. If you're still uncertain about what took place at that first altar, then get back there. Get back to that brazen altar and deal with that. Your salvation's based on what Jesus did for you, not on what you're doing for him. And if you think you're doing something for him that's earning you something else, then you've got strange incense you're bringing. And it's not sweet smelling. Strange. Smells funny. It's not the stuff that the Lord wants to smell, you see. Guys, he saves us to the uttermost. That's the thing. And we go to prayer based on that truth, on what he did, not on our own offering. And although you might think that's something that we should do, or that, man, you know, I need to bring all these things to the Lord. I mean, he's worthy of all those things. No, he's not. He's worthy of this, coming to his altar, fired up, ignited in prayer because of one thing, what Jesus did for me on the cross. Lord, this is why I'm coming. I can come to you in prayer because he died for me, and that's that. You know, I'm not going to try and prove to you that I'm something I'm not. I'm just going to let you have praise and worship, and you just do what you want, Lord. You know, my life, hey, it's in your hands. If you want to fix the car, great. If you don't, oh well, never liked that car anyway. See, even, you see, Jesus prayed on this basis. Do you understand that? John 17, verse 4. While Jesus is praying for his disciples and for us, really, he's there praying. And in verse 4 of John 17, Jesus said, I have glorified thee, speaking to the Father, on earth. I have finished the work which thou gavest me to do. Now, right after this, Jesus begins to make petitions for his disciples and for us. But before Jesus asked the Father for anything, he expresses the fact that he has finished the work. Before Jesus says to the Father, Lord, bless these guys, give them this or whatever, before he says any of that, before he asks the Father anything, he expresses the sheer fact that he has finished the work that he was sent to do. And guys, before you ask the Father anything, may I suggest you do the same thing. You express to the Father that Jesus has finished the work. And therefore, you don't finish it for him or even try. Before you make petitions, you've got to realize that the brass altar where Jesus Christ is pictured finishing the work and accepting that, you see, that's the basis you come and say, Lord, I'm not going to ask for anything until I accept this. And before you light the incense, before you pray, make sure you have that fire from off the altar. That's the only fire that'll light it. Well, what if I don't? What if I just come on my own? What's the Lord going to do to me? Well, ask Nadab and Abihu. Who? The sons of Aaron. You might remember the story in Leviticus 10. We'll get there in a little bit. But here's the thing. These two sons of Aaron, if you recall, when the tabernacle gets dedicated. Okay, turn over there just for a second. Leviticus chapter 10. Here we see that verse 23 says, Moses and Aaron went into the tabernacle of the congregation. Or this is verse 9, or chapter 9, verse 23. Moses and Aaron went into the tabernacle of the congregation, came out and blessed the people, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto all the people, and there came a fire out from before the Lord and consumed upon the altar and burnt offering and burnt the fat and burnt the whole thing up. And when all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. So while this tabernacle now is being dedicated, after all the preparations are made, they've built the tabernacle and they're dedicating it, and God sends fire down from heaven and ignites that sacrifice that's on the altar, the fat, the whole thing. Everything's ignited, right? And everybody shouts. I mean, it's just really a major happening. And then, you see, in verse 1 of chapter 10, Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer and put fire therein and incense thereon and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he commanded them not. When did he command that? Back here. Back here in Exodus 30. Don't offer me any strange incense. Don't bring anything of your own. And they did it anyway. They offered strange fire, which means they lit those censers with incense in them with their own fire. And what happened? Verse 2. There went out fire from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. So, you want to pray on your own. Now, of course, if this happened, every time somebody prayed on their own, none of us would be sitting here. You understand that. We'd all been burned up a long time ago, but here's the point the Lord's making. You don't bring this strange fire. You don't light your own fire. You have to do it based upon what the Lord said, the fire from off the altar. Now, had Nadab and Abihu gone over to the altar and said, let's get some fire off there, light our censers, no problem. Understanding where the fire comes from. The fire comes from Jesus Christ, what he did on the cross, you see. And here's the thing. Why did the Lord have to wipe these guys out? Well, what they were doing as priests, lighting their own incense, bringing their own offering, was really proclaiming this, that worship to the Lord can be offered, listen, in other ways besides what Jesus Christ did on the cross. I can worship God any way I want. I can serve God in any way I want to. I can move out and I can be a part of serving God any way I please. And so they lit their own fire. They brought their own offering, basically, before the Lord. And God slew them for that. He wiped them out for that. And here's the thing. If you want to feel wiped out, you want to feel burned out, you want to feel like there's just not much happening in your life spiritually, then do the same thing. Bring strange fire. Bring your own thing. Try and worship God in some other capacity besides just acknowledging his son, and you'll find the same thing spiritually happens to you. You dry up. You get burnt out. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And people are trying. Do you know that in many fundamental churches today, Christian churches that, you know, you would probably say, hey, these guys are just, you know, brothers and sisters in the Lord. Many of them have really left Jesus Christ out. It's becoming more and more mainstream to just kind of get real vague about the person of Jesus. I'll tell you what. Fire's coming down from heaven. It's not ever to be. We are to remember him in everything, always. He is the source of fire for prayer, for worship, for serving in any capacity. And if he's not, you're just looking for trouble. Spiritually, you're going to dry up and blow away. So, the incense, you see, was lit from fire from off the altar, or it was going to be death to them. God said that they die not. Remember in Leviticus 10 there that you're to not do this. If you do, you'll die. They saw that happen literally. We see it happen spiritually. Now, you might say, well, those poor guys, I mean, that was kind of heavy, wasn't it? I mean, one time they brought strange fire and they got fired up, all right, you know, fired right up to heaven. Why? And again, the Lord does this often, doesn't he? We see it over and over in the scriptures that he will make one particular incident prove his point. And he didn't do this again. Didn't have to. You recall Ananias and Sapphira? The New Testament, Nadab and Abihu, they tried to fool the Lord. Now, it was a different illustration. They were hypocrites. And God was proving the same point, really, in a different way, that this isn't to be in the church. You're not to be hypocritical. They had sold property, remember? And they brought the money to Peter, but they acted like they brought all the money to Peter, and really they only brought part of it, and they kept the rest of it. But they acted like they brought the whole thing. Yeah, boy, we really made a sacrifice. Sold that property. Here's the money. And Peter, being under the power of the Holy Spirit and discerning it, said, what are you doing? Wasn't that your property to sell? Yeah. Well, how come you're trying to fool God? And then he said, you're dead. And he died. And then his wife came in, remember? And he asked her the same thing. Is this how much money you got for the property? Yep. Aren't we special? You're special, all right. You're especially dead. And she died. Now, again, God was proving something that he didn't want to take place again. He was making a serious point. And, of course, if every hypocrite that ever lived in the church was to experience the same thing, again, we'd all be dead. But he's making a serious point. He does it here, he does it over there. So don't feel too sorry for Nadab and Abihu. They were used to press a point. I've been used to press a point or two on occasion. You? The Lord ever used you as an example to other people? It's not fun, but necessary. So, if the incense then was lit from the fire from off the altar, then this fragrance again would fill the air. But not only that, and this is important, and I know we're taking a long time on these verses, but it's really important. What would happen when the fire from off the altar lit that incense, the smoke would rise, but also the priest's garments, his clothes would get saturated with the smell, the fragrance of that incense. So when he came out after serving in the holy place, when he came out of there, he smelled like the incense. He had the same fragrance, you see. And when he came out, everybody could smell that he's been in the presence of God, offering up prayers. Everyone could smell that he had been in that place with the Lord. And it was a continual, verse 8 tells us, offering. The burning of the incense was continual. It just never stopped. So whenever the priest would go in there, it would just always smell that way. I wonder, what do people smell when we're around? What do we smell like spiritually, of course? What is it that people smell? What is the fragrance that we have when we're in the presence of others? Do we have that fragrance, that sweetness that we've been in prayer for others, or have we been kind of judgmental? Because if we have, we're not going to smell like this. We're going to smell like something else. And we're going to stink. If our hearts, you see, have been not praying for people, not being passionate about praying for others, but we've just been looking around going, yeah, brother. Can you believe that guy? Can you believe them? Can you believe her? If we're just frustrated and judgmental of people, guys, we'll smell like it. But if we've been praying for people and we see people struggling, we see issues in people's lives and we say, oh, Lord, I just want to offer them up. I know they're struggling with this. I know they're hurting there. And Lord, I've been there, not for the grace of God, I'd be there right now. And I'm just going to offer this up to you. I want you to, Lord, bless them. If that's your heart, if that's what you've been about, then that's what people will smell. Your fragrance will be that of this incense of prayer. Isn't that what you want? It's really what I want. I want people to be able to smell the fragrance of Jesus when they get around me. They know you've been praying for them. Can they smell the fragrance or not? We only take on his fragrance, guys, when we've been in his presence. It's the only time. So these priests would come out smelling like that. Now, watch this. We'll move on. Verse 11. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, when thou takest the sum of the children of Israel after their number, then shall they give every man a ransom for his soul unto the Lord, when thou numberest them, that there be no plague among them when thou numberest them. This they shall give every one that passeth among them that are numbered, half a shekel, after the shekel of the sanctuary. A shekel is 20 gerahs. A half a shekel shall be the offering of the Lord. Every one that passeth among them that are numbered from 20 years and older shall give an offering unto the Lord. The rich shall not give more, and the poor shall not give less than half a shekel, when they give an offering unto the Lord to make an atonement for their souls. And thou shalt take the atonement money of the children of Israel, and shall appoint it for the service of the tabernacle of the congregation, that it may be a memorial unto the children of Israel before the Lord, to make an atonement for your souls. Now, this seems strange, doesn't it? I mean, you could read this and go crazy, kind of, thinking about why would the Lord do that? I mean, what does this mean? What are the spiritual implications of that? It sounds like we're buying our salvation, doesn't it? Sounds like the Lord's saying, pay up. I know you thought it was free, but I've changed my mind. Now I want some money. Does the Lord need money? Seems strange to us. Why number the people? Why count them? Well, it sounds strange until you understand a few things. Numbering, the whole book of Numbers is about this principle. Numbering the people simply represents ownership. God numbers those that are his. He knows those that are his. In fact, he not only numbers you, but he numbers the very hairs on your head. Sorry, Jimmy. Yeah, sorry. Jimmy's shaking his head, not mine. He numbers the hairs. He knows everything about you and numbers it. He is into numbering you because he is your owner. You belong to him. And, you know, if you're a farmer or a rancher and you have herds or flocks, you know how many you've got. Why? Because they're yours. Now, you may not know how many your neighbor has, but then again, you might. You might know how many your neighbor has, and that might make you mad. But you surely know how many you have, don't you? And that's all this speaks of. The numbering means that God has ownership of you, and that's why you're numbered among his. It's a great thing. I'm glad I'm numbered. I'm glad I'm in that number, you see. God numbers people that are his. And here's the thing. He numbers the stars. He numbers the sand on the seashore. I mean, he knows all that stuff because it's his. He knows the names of them all. He's got names for stars that we don't even know. We try and figure it out. He knows everything there is to know because it's all his. Okay, you say, but what about the money? I'm getting hung up on that part. Okay, the numbering thing, he owns us, and that's an ownership thing, but what about the money? Well, this is obviously symbolic of the acceptance the people have of God. Otherwise, the amount of money here would be far greater than it is. Now, you understand here, all they're asked to give is a half a shekel. Do you know how much a shekel's worth? About 65 cents. So a half a shekel, so you do the math. Is that 37 and a half cents? Something like that? Everybody's like, huh? Come on now, get some math. Jim, what is that, 37 and a half? 32 and a half? 65, 32 and a half. Thanks, Jim. Got a math teacher. I was terrible at math. You can tell, can't you? 32.5 cents. It's not much. Now, if the Lord was asking for you to buy your salvation, do you think he'd only ask for 32.5 cents? Or would he? There's two ways you could look at that, isn't there? Maybe that's all the Lord thinks my life's worth. Give me 32 cents. Round it up to a quarter. But no, it's only symbolic. And this is the thing I think we need to understand. There's nothing here that's speaking of value in terms of ourselves. In other words, God's not asking for a lot from us. Why? Well, we don't have a lot to give. This is simply an acknowledgement, folks. No amount of money can pay for even one sin. Not one. We can't atone for one little silly sin, not to mention the multitude of sins we've committed. But silver, as you know, is the metal of redemption. And this is where we get that truth. Here we see that it's silver. It's these little pieces of silver, not worth much, that were basically a ransom for their souls. Notice that all the children of Israel were to pay the same amount. They were all to pay a half a shekel. Why? Because all souls are the same to God. Oh, you think sometimes that, well, certainly that guy is more valuable to God, or him, or her, because look at them. I mean, they've got all kinds of ability. They're so spiritual. Certainly that they were of far more value. Certainly the Lord knew that Billy Graham was going to be, you know, this giant spiritually. And me, he thought, maybe you don't have to pay anything. You know, it's not true. It says that the rich and the poor pay the same. There's no particular bias. He's not partial, is he, to persons? Anybody, everybody, doesn't matter who you are, pays the same. All souls are the same. We couldn't pay enough silver to cover our sin, but we must accept the silver that atones for our sin. What do you mean? Well, Jesus, of course, was sold out for what? 30 pieces of silver. I couldn't pay enough silver to cover my sin, but he was sold out for 30 pieces of silver to pay for my sin. And I've got to acknowledge that. And I have to say, yes, Lord. And the value here is non-essential. It's just the fact that we participate in this one way, and that is I accept this picture of silver, which is redemption. I accept redemption. I accept it, which is all we can do. We accept. And we see later on in chapter 38, verse 25 through 28, you see that the silver that was taken from this offering was melted down. And do you know what they did with it? They made the sockets, the bases for the boards and the poles, the pillars in the tabernacle with it. In other words, this whole tabernacle that we've been looking at, the whole thing rested on a foundation of silver, on redemption. The whole thing, the whole premise that we live by, the whole understanding that we have of salvation of our Lord is based upon this one element. It rests on it like the tabernacle did, on redemption, which is what? Which is Jesus saying, I'll buy you. I'll buy you back. You see, it's not them buying their way. It's just their acknowledgement of the fact that he did, and the whole tabernacle rested on that. Why do they have to give? Because they had to participate. Not much. They didn't give a bunch, but they had to acknowledge. They had to participate. You have to participate. How? You have to engage. It's all done for you, but unless you say, yep, and so to speak, here's my 32 cents worth. In other words, I agree. I accept the silver redemption that Jesus Christ accomplished. I know he was sold out. I couldn't do it. I couldn't pay enough. And verse 16 says it was to be a memorial. They were to remember this. You see, this is the real issue. We only acknowledge redemption, folks. We can't buy it. But we remember that he did, and everything rests on it. And guys, I want to wrap up because I know we're getting close to time. But everything has to rest on this one thing. And this whole chapter, and we'll finish it up. I think we'll finish it up just Sunday. We'll just make the rest of this chapter Sunday's teaching, I think. But anyway, you can't worship. You cannot worship God unless you're redeemed, unless you have come into that relationship, unless you've been to the brazen altar, unless you understood what he did for you there. And you don't have to take that truth now. You can remember it, and it's always good to. It's important. But you don't take now that element of salvation based on what he did. You don't take that now with you to the altar of incense. In other words, it's settled, isn't it? Is it settled for you? Or maybe you're trying to move past the brazen altar to the altar of incense, and you're finding yourself confused, confounded, because if you haven't been there and settled the issue, my sin's been paid for by his blood, not by my discipline, not by my will to do good, not by my awesome prayers to the Lord, not by any of those things. And I don't take that to the Lord in prayer. It's strange to him. It's strange incense. I settle it first. You've got to embrace, you see. That's the ransom for your soul. But he did. Such a good thing. It's such an awesome truth. We covered verses 17 through 21 on Sunday, so we won't take time tonight. I really think I want to stop. And I think what I want to do as we go into communion, I want to encourage you tonight. I really believe that the Lord wants to speak to some of us tonight on this very issue. I think perhaps the Lord may want to show you again what he's done. The table, we can remember that. And that's an awesome thing, because that's where we understand once more that Jesus' body was beaten and broken for me. His blood was shed for me. But I want you to understand, this is the element that allows you to go further. That is the truth that allows you to pursue anything more with the Lord. And I think there's oftentimes the mentality, the desire to do something with the Lord, but we place ourselves in the position to be the reason why he would do it. I'm the reason God is going to answer my prayer. I'm the reason that he is going to do something awesome in my life. I'm the reason that he's going to move in this way. And boy, is this tricky. The only reason I would give God to do anything is to send me to hell. That's all the reason I've given him to do anything. And that's true today. just as true as it was before I got saved. You see, we don't impress God any more now than we did then. And frankly, folks, we're not really any more impressive. And this is something that Christians, I think, need to face up to. I am saved by grace, and I live every day of my life by the grace of God, just forgiving me, just blessing me, even though I don't deserve any of it. Even though I give him reasons to hurl fire down and consume me like Nadab and Abihu, he just keeps pouring out blessings. He just keeps touching me and causing me to realize that he's there again. And even though I go off on my own arrogance sometimes and think that I deserve some of this stuff that he's doing, he doesn't zap me and throw me down. He wants me to understand that Jesus is my Lord, and that's why he blesses me. That's why he gives me anything, because I certainly don't deserve it. I haven't earned anything, folks. And frankly, I don't want to try to earn. I just want to sit at his feet and say, thanks. You're an awesome God because of what you've done. And I certainly have done nothing that would warrant any of this goodness. But I'll take it. I'll take it, and I'll bless your name, and I'll praise you, because that's what that causes me to do. But as soon as I start thinking it's me, I miss out. And I don't want you to miss out tonight. I don't want us to miss any of what the Lord wants to do. And I think tonight, he wants to bless your socks off. He wants to restore unto you the joy of the salvation that he's given. And it's very difficult to enjoy it when you're too busy trying to earn it or keep it. So just enjoy him tonight. Dine with Jesus again. And just let him bless your socks off. Let him bless your life. Just because he's good, even though you're not. His goodness more than makes up for our wickedness. He's a good God. Let's pray. Lord, I just know that there's so much you want to do. And I also know, Lord, that so often I'm the very reason, I'm the very hindrance to that purpose, that thing you want to do. And Lord, I just ask tonight that you would refresh us with this reality, with this truth, that it's all about what Jesus has done. And I come to you, Lord, tonight in prayer. And we all do, I think, based on that truth. Jesus has taken care of it all at the brazen altar, which gives me access here at the golden altar of incense. And I'll remember what he's done, and that lights up this prayer. And it's sweet because it doesn't have anything to do with me. Because when I burn on the altar, I don't smell good. But when Jesus did, it was sweet. And so I remember that, Lord. It's the only thing that causes you to smile upon me. It's what he did. So, Lord, tonight, I just pray blessing on many tonight that would come. And just give you, Lord, your worth, and give you praise and give you honor tonight just because of what you've accomplished and what you've done. May we rest on that, on the redemption of our souls because of what you've accomplished. You were sold out. We are blessed. And we thank you for that, Lord. And we commit the rest of our time to you now. In Jesus' name, amen.